Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening, May 3rd, 2007, and good evening. The first thing I want to talk about is how to keep an even keel and to stay happy. Be calm through the mess that you see going around you today. The biggest thing you have to do is take everything with a grain of salt. In most cases, there's very little you can do about what's going on today. So get yourself prepared. Be confident, and this is something that actually goes back to the Hale Bopp days and more recently the Planet X days. I was on a lot of radio shows talking, and people would call up and they'd say, what can I do to prepare? And as I've always said, preparation is the same no matter what the event might be. Being able to take care of yourself is the primary goal of being confident. Don't expect that government truck to come driving up, that big semi from the government. Don't expect it to come up and drive up to the front of your house and say, gee, we got a lot of supplies for you. If some disaster occurs, whether it's man-made, whether it's natural, or a combination of both, nobody's going to come out and help you. I got news for you. You just ask the people in New Orleans, what's going to happen if a disaster occurs? Nobody is going to come out and say, we're going to lend you a helping hand. They're going to come out and try and prevent you from surviving. That's the best thing that they're going to do. You know, from there it goes downhill. The other point is, be confident in the ability to take care of yourself, and then you will be happy. So become prepared. As the old Boy Scouts saying, and I'm sure the Girl Scouts had a saying exactly the same, be prepared, get ready, and be able to take care of yourself, because you're the only one that's going to be taking care of yourself if something comes down one of these days. And the other thing you need to do is maintain a good sense of humor. The past number of weeks, we do this regularly. I have a small staff of volunteers that help out, and we do searches, we call them deep searches on the internet, to clean up the garbage trying to destroy my name, trying to just badmouth me, divert attention from what I'm doing. You wouldn't believe the garbage that we find people trying to do relative to my work, my name, etc., coupled with, say, search engines who are being paid to divert attention. When people search on my name, you don't get my material, you get some other garbage up there. So through all of this, I mean, throughout my whole history of being a scientist and watching the antics that, say, NASA and the government scientists and their paid pawns go through, I just have to keep an even keel and remain happy, because the biggest thing, as I've said before, the biggest thing those people want you to do is be unhappy, to be unstable. They want you to be dependent on them, and they want you to be nervous and afraid. That's what all of this orange and red, the level of fear, is all about. You know, you can't go to a baseball game or a football game. You can't go to a public area. You can't go to an airport without constant, that same voice, no weapons of mass destruction allowed in the airport. You know, the police will confiscate bags. You know, it's constant, just reminding you that you are not in control and someone else is in control. That's, you know, it's on the news every night. It's on the newspaper. It's in magazines. Every popular magazine that goes out to the public for science or, you know, Popular Science or Popular Mechanics, any of those magazines are all geared towards making you attentive that someone else is in control of your life. But what I'm saying is that the primary thing that you should focus on today, and let's take an example, and this is something you have to do, it's something I do. You draw your circles around things that are important to you, your family, your kids, your relatives, your parents, your parent-in-laws, you know. All of these people are in your somewhat your inner circle. Your friends, a girlfriend that you would like to meet or have, maybe somebody you haven't met yet or somebody you have. All of these situations, these are the people in your inner circle, so to speak. These are the people that count, the people that are important to you. Then outside of that are things, like your house. But within that, you have to understand how to take care of yourself. And I always tell people, water is the most important aspect of your daily life. Take away water, you are going to have some problems. So, at any rate, I'm not going to dwell on this a lot. People know about the Berkey water filter. That's part of being confident that you can take care of yourself. And I've noticed more and more people are using mail order, so that's why I just want to quickly give the address. The Berkey water filter. Copy this address down, and I'll give you a second to get a pencil and a paper. But here's what you get with the Berkey water filter when you order it from me. Now, the prices are set by the manufacturer, so I try and throw in a couple benefits to make it a good purchase for you, not only price-wise, but quality. What are you getting? You're getting a water filter that will take out viruses and bacteria. It leaves in the minerals which you need. You should not drink demineralized water. So at any rate, you get the Berkey water filter, two filter elements, the black Berkey filter elements, plus two extra that you will need in case of emergency, in case one breaks, or in case you have a larger group. Then you would use four of the filters at one time to filter the water faster. And then the free Kato 911 RX 911 radio, shortwave radio, that you can use to listen to this radio show. That's for free. I throw that in. Plus free shipping to the 50 states. A very good deal for $315. And as I said, that's the manufacturer's price. So the radio and free shipping are thrown in for free. The address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. That's JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. I have a long list of topics I want to cover tonight. And, of course, by the way, my webpage is always there, jmccsci.com. All of the information is there, including the Berkey water filter. 2.7 gigabytes of information on that website. Not many web pages will give you that level of information. 2.7 gigabytes is a boatload of information, and you won't find any government site, including NASA, that'll give you that level of information and detailed interpretations of how this world works. So make sure you go there, make sure you listen to the radio shows, the archived radio shows. Many years of my radio shows are archived on that page. By the way, the main topic I'm going to talk about tonight is dealing with what really is going on with global warming and the sun, the activity, the melting of the ice caps. And the simple fact that nobody of all of these high laureate scientists, nobody is talking about what we should be doing with all of that fresh water. Tons and tons of fresh water rolling off Antarctica, Greenland ice cap, the world glaciers, the European glaciers, and they're just letting it roll right down into the ocean. Oh, it is a vast resource that we will not see again on this planet. We have to redirect that into cavities that are on Earth, places that need water, and redirect it. We need to be spending our energy on that effort to trap that water and make use of it. So that'll be the main topic for tonight's show, and I've talked about that before, but I want to go through a thorough discussion of how global warming really works. And leading up to that, there are some articles just this past week in the news that will lead up to that very important topic. Just a quick mention, the New Horizons NASA satellite going to Pluto, expected to arrive at Pluto in the year 2015, and that will be very interesting because Pluto is the one planet we have not seen. We've seen Mercury, Venus up very close, Earth, of course, and many thousands of satellites probably that have studied Earth. Mars, of course, has had a great deal of attention with satellites, and Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, all of them having an immense amount of attention with the Voyager, the Pioneer spacecraft, but little Pluto sitting way out there has had no attention at all other than some very high-resolution photographs from the Hubble Space Telescope. Enough to know that there is distinctive land features on Pluto. And other than that, they don't know a whole lot about it. But it should be interesting. But at any rate, the New Horizons spacecraft just went by the planet Jupiter. And a couple quick comments on that little passage. Very close up and personal pictures of the planet Jupiter. Very interesting, and then some scientific studies. But I want to give some praise, and a lot of times I'm very critical of NASA, but it's mainly the scientists at NASA that I'm critical regarding their theories and their adherence to outdated theories, that somehow the solar system formed billions of years ago and nothing has happened since. They look at the solar system as a very stale, dormant solar system, and I don't see it that way. I see our solar system as a very dynamic, electrically active solar system. But I want to give some praise here to certain people that work behind the scenes at NASA and in the aerospace corporations that build those remarkable satellite machines, guide them to their location with precision, man them, and those are the engineers, and they are the unsung heroes of the entire space program, all the way back to the Apollo program. They're the ones that built the Apollo systems, the Gemini, where we had two astronauts in one space capsule, and back to the very early days of the single manned capsules. The Gemini program was very good. And by the way, I'm not going to divert this conversation to talk and badmouth NASA in the fact that there's nothing going on today. But I want to praise the engineers. I want to give these guys, the guys that never get any credit, and you never hear about them in the standard news media. You always get some quote from some lofty NASA scientist who's taken credit for all of this when... sure, they did something, but it's those engineers, the ones, hundreds, thousands of them working on these satellites. They're working in the aerospace corporations. They're the ones that make NASA tick. If it weren't for these guys, nothing would happen at NASA. These are the guys that build the rockets, the satellites, the mechanisms, the little bolts that blow out of the side of the satellite when they have to release a door or a latch. All of this engineering, incredible engineering that has to work flawlessly in outer space. the rad hardening of the electronics, the memory, the camera systems, all of this, the unsung heroes of the space age, the engineers. And I can't say enough about them. When I was in college back in the 60s, we used to get the manuals for the Apollo space program. We had big, thick manuals that had every moving part on the Saturn V rocket. Something I learned about the cooling systems in the engines. We had all of this at our disposal when I went to college because our teachers, our professors at the college I went to, St. Mary's College, which is now St. Mary's University in Minnesota, had the foresight to go out and get all of this information so we could see it as students. And so as a result, I got a very good introduction to the space program early in my professional life as a student studying physics. And so my hats, if I had many of them, would go off to the engineers who make this space program work. And at any rate, one other topic regarding the New Horizons space satellite that is going by Jupiter right now, something it is using that has been used many times in the past with spacecraft that go out to the outer planets, it's called the slingshot effect, but in technical terms, it's a gravitational assist. And here's how it works. You bring a satellite by one of the major planets, and it actually gains energy. A little bit of energy from the orbit of Jupiter is lost, and it is by taking the satellite in a particular path by the planet Jupiter, the small satellite picks up that energy and gains about 3 years in getting out to the planet Pluto, which is, of course, the farthest named planet. Well, of course, Pluto was demoted last year. To me, it's still a planet. Pluto is a planet. I don't care what anybody says. The astronomical community can vote all they want. Pluto is a planet. There you go. Anyway, but the slingshot effect, here's how it works. You need two celestial bodies to make this work. One is the Sun and one is Jupiter. If Jupiter were sitting there just by itself, the slingshot effect, the gravitational assist technique would not work. So it's a very well-known theoretical concept in celestial mechanics, the study of the motion of the planets, and it also works in reverse. And this is the point that I want to make. That if this spacecraft came in from Pluto or the direction of Pluto and it came by exactly in the reverse path along that same path but in the coming in from Pluto into the inner solar system and by Jupiter due to the gravitational assist of the Sun and Jupiter, the pair of them, it would lose energy. The same amount of energy it gained in going out, it would lose coming back in. And that is what is called capture. It's the capture phenomenon that works with comets or asteroids or any other celestial object that comes into the solar system. And as a result, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, Earth, all of the planets have the ability to capture objects coming into the solar system if their path is just right. And of course that would be random for a random object coming into the solar system, but the point is that capture is the mechanism by which we build solar systems. It is the mechanism by which I realized that solar systems are formed not at one time but by the continual adoption of new objects coming in from the solar system. So I want to take this opportunity as the New Horizons spacecraft is going out to Pluto, gaining energy as it comes by Jupiter. I want to let you know that that same process works in reverse to capture objects coming into the solar system and allow them to become permanent members of our solar system. At any rate, on to the next topic. This article because I've seen this in a number of places. They're talking about a scientific study that came out of the Intergovernmental Panel. Say that again. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And I've talked about these guys before. These are the famous paid climate scientists from around the world who are literally paid to talk about and promote global warming concepts. Now, there's no doubt that the Earth is warming up. The question is, why is the Earth warming up? And the clear answer is that it is not due to man-made effects. And this article, by their own reckoning, will prove that, but they still don't want to talk about the fact that their prediction models do not predict what is happening on Earth. So here's the title that I saw. This came off of CNN, and it's called Arctic Melt Worse Than Predictions. And basically what it says is that the Arctic melting of freshwater ice is happening at a far greater rate than predicted by the models that are given by scientists who believe in global warming. There is a reason for this, and I'll talk more about this in the main part of the show. The fact of the matter is we are coming out of an ice age. That happened a number of thousands of years ago, and I'm not going to put an exact date on that, but we all know that Earth is coming out of an ice age. We know that there were glaciers in North America. Those glaciers are receding, and most of them almost gone at this point. And the old North Pole was somewhere in the up in the Canada, north of the state of Wisconsin and Michigan. That's where the old North Pole was. Siberia in northern Russia was a very temperate climate at the time, with tropical plants and mastodons roaming on the Great Plains, and those were shifted, their pole shifted, very suddenly a number of thousands of years ago, and they were flash frozen, including the tropical plants in their throat. But once again, science, in its great ignorance, marches on giving completely incorrect science to the public by way of this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They're the ones, remember, they were the same group a number of weeks ago that gave the prediction that due to global warming, there would be droughts and water shortages. What I want to talk about and be very specific tonight is that there is unprecedented amounts of fresh water rolling off of the glaciers, the ice caps, the Greenland ice cap, the Antarctic ice cap, and the North Polar cap. Absolutely tremendous amounts of fresh water, and nobody is saying a word about capturing that fresh water and doing something with it. It's the greatest resource on this planet. It's greater than oil. It's greater than the freshwater lakes that exist. Here are the statistics, just to make you understand the proportion of water that is starting to melt. The freshwater lakes of Lake Superior, the Great Lakes, Michigan, Erie, the entire Huron, the entire Great Lake system and the St. Lawrence Seaway, tremendous amount of fresh water. There are other Great Lakes in the world, including in Russia, that are salt-free. These are freshwater lakes. The amount of water in all of the world's fresh lakes, and including the reservoirs, including, for example, the Oglala Reservoir in Nebraska that runs up partway into Canada, underground, incredible amounts of water that is now being tapped for agriculture and is actually being depleted as I speak. The entire freshwater supply on the planet right now, including underground water that we know about, subsurface water, is only 5% of the freshwater on Earth. The other 95% of the fresh water is locked in the Antarctic ice cap, the Greenland ice cap, the North Polar cap, and some of the world's glaciers. But the majority of this fresh water is literally in Antarctica and in the Greenland ice cap, and it is melting. And nobody is doing anything about this. So we literally have 20 times the amount of fresh water that we currently have in the freshwater reservoirs of the entire world. 20 times that is in the Antarctic cap, the Greenland cap, and the North Polar cap. All of this is freshwater ice. There's no such thing as frozen salt water. This is all freshwater ice. And it is melting due to global warming, which is caused by excess heat from the sun and the fact that we are coming out of an ice age and getting back up to our normal climate. This 20 times the existing amount of water on the planet is melting, and nobody is saying anything about it. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be a PhD. You don't have to even have a kindergarten education to understand that we have to start looking at a mechanism for trapping the water off of these reservoirs and ice caps as they melt and start moving that fresh water to local distribution points where it can be used. Regreening the Sahara Desert, reversing the desertification, the desert making process that's going on all over the world today has to be reversed. We have the resources, but all of our resources are going into some war on terror that is controlling the entire resource allotment of the world. So at any rate, you can start to see that when the UN or all the way down to your local government, when they start to try and control the limited water supply that we have on this planet, it is simply based on absolute ignorance and stupidity, because we have more fresh water on this planet than we would ever know what to do with. 20 times the amount of fresh water in all of the lakes and reservoirs of the world is starting to melt off those polar caps, the Greenland ice cap, and nobody is doing a thing about it. It's going to actually change conditions in the seawater. So anyway, I'm going to talk more about that in the main science topic. I just have a couple little items to bring up here, science items that were in the news. I'm sure you heard about the shuttle rocket engines, the solid fuel booster rockets, that were on a train coming from Utah going to Florida and were derailed. Now, and they're going to send them back to Utah to make sure that they're, you know, to see if they're okay. I can't imagine an astronaut getting into the space shuttle with one of those babies strapped onto you and think that you're somehow safe after the track record that NASA has in disasters. Remember, it was a slight flaw and a slight disformation in an O-ring between one of the two sections of the solid rocket boosters that caused one of the shuttle disasters, the very first one. And these rocket tanks with the fuel in them, full of fuel, went flying off the railroad cars into a woods, and they're going to take them back, put them back together, and shoot off seven astronauts into space on those. I'm not going to be one of those guys, I can tell you that. And just to add a little note there, Florida, when the bidding went out for the solid rocket boosters, there was a company in Florida right up the road from Cape Canaveral, which used to be called Cape Kennedy, of course. There was a company that could have made the rocket boosters right there, but a political decision based on congressional influence moved that contract to Utah. so that these huge rocket sections had to be shipped from Utah to Florida. Isn't that sweet? I wish... No, I can't. I'm not going to go there. At any rate, on to the next... Oh, just a little comment. And a lot of people have brought this up, and so I'm going to make a comment here. This show is typically not about politics, but since I haven't heard this mentioned on other shows and the reports I get back from the people who listen around the radio networks are not talking about this, I will bring it up on this show. I've already talked about Prince Harry going to war. Now, let's get serious, folks. This is Prince Harry of England. He's being shipped off to Iraq. And do you think the war in Iraq really is going to turn in our favor or in anybody's favor because Harry is there? The most I think he will do is find a local place to consume mentally alternative commodities, let's put it that way. Let's put it mildly. So is Harry really going to make a big difference in the war? I don't think so. So the question has to remain, what is Harry being sent to Iraq for? And the answer, the only conclusion we can really come up with, is to draw England into the war. Now, if you look at World War I, that Prince Ferdinand and King Ferdinand or whatever, every time there's a war, it seems that there's some royalty involved, and that kicks off the national fervor necessary to bring a country into a war. So what's Harry's true role in Iraq? Certainly not to become a hero and win the war. It might be to come home in a box so that England will enter the war. Remember, they were leaving and pulling out a little while ago. And, of course, the goal, if you read into this far enough, would be to get England into a war against Iran. Gee, Harry, I wouldn't want to be in your little shoes and sandals down there. Australia this week had this story, of course, circulated widely, and so I'm not going to repeat the story that has been well documented on many radio shows. The drought is so severe in southern Australia that they are actually thinking of moving the population. Another water-related drought story, and in southern Australia. Now, this is truly amazing because you can walk not too great a distance anywhere in Australia, especially in the southern agricultural region that we're talking about, and find an ocean. There's a lot of water on this planet. You just have to know how to get it and process it and make it useful. That was like a couple of weeks ago. There was an island. Remember, was that in Guam or where was that island that had a drought situation and they were shipping water over to it because it was running out of water? I've lived on tropical islands during the dry season, and definitely things do dry up. But you're surrounded by an ocean, so much water that you could not possibly use it all. And so the point is, there are many countries, including Israel, which uses desalinated water exclusively for agriculture. And I remember when I was younger, they started using desalinated water for agriculture. And the problem was that they didn't get all the salt out, and so after a couple seasons, the ground became salty and infertile, and crops would not grow there. So now they've got the system down where you can actually use desalinated water for agriculture, and they use a drip system where it's very efficient use of water. Unlike the United States, where we spray the water up in the air and 90% of it goes up into the atmosphere, doesn't even get to the root of the plant, and there's a tremendous waste of water in that type of irrigation technique. But here is Australia with tremendous amounts of rain in the north, there, nobody's talking about piping the water down there and no use of desalination. It's like they simply don't know how to manage this water issue on a planetary scale. So at any rate, another quick topic, this past week discovered in Illinois a fern, a fossilized forest in the middle of a coal mine. Now, it's very interesting to see that the explanation for how the coal got into Illinois with a fern forest simply avoids one of the main questions. What was a fern forest doing, a tropical fern forest, an equatorial type of fern forest, what was it doing in the center of the state of Illinois? And remember that before the last ice age, before the shift of the North Pole, Illinois was literally near the Arctic Circle. Remember that when the white man, the Europeans, first came from Europe and came into the state of Illinois, and even up to maybe 50 years ago, that most of the state of Illinois was swampland, tremendously wet, and they drained it all off with tile in the agricultural lands to get the water out of there so they could have agriculture. Most of Illinois was swampland, and that was after the great flood, after the great thaw that occurred with the North Polar Cap, what we used to call the Laurentian Ice Cap, melted, and that, of course, extended from about Iowa over into Nebraska, all the way out to nearly into Oregon, then north up through Alberta, Saskatchewan, east into what is now St. James Bay in Canada, and then down where it actually came as far east as New York State. That was the North Polar Cap. In the center of that cap was somewhere north of the state of Wisconsin or Michigan, about 300 miles north. And, of course, a state like Minnesota was completely covered with the old glacier. All of those markings of the glacier is currently very visible in Minnesota. And so at any rate, Illinois specifically was just off the southern region of that great northern glacier, the old North Pole polar cap. And then the big earth change, the big polar shift occurred a number of thousands of years ago, moving the north rotational pole up to where it is today, and the water from the great Laurentian ice cap melted very quickly, and we see all of the results of that in many different ways. But the point is, how on earth did Illinois, or even if you imagine that Illinois was right where it is today, how did Illinois have a equatorial fern forest growing in the middle of its state? And how did these coal mines form? Well, obviously, there's been some shifting going on this planet, and it's not something that happens by itself. These rotations of the planet, where the planet literally tilts and the pole shifts by 20 to 30, maybe 40 degrees, has happened many times. And this is proof of it, but in the explanation of this, this is by Champaign Urbana, this particular mine, they simply say that Illinois, look at it, it says right here, Illinois is near the equator. Well, sorry guys, it's not there now. And they avoid talking about how Illinois got to where it is now, when once it was by the equator. And then they go through a little song and dance of how the coal mine formed. But at any rate, once again, clear evidence that this Earth is not the way it was even in the somewhat near geological distant past. Here's another article talking about Venus and Mars, and of course giving very standard explanations, greenhouse effect, etc., trying to explain how Venus is hot due to a greenhouse effect, and Mars is farther away from the sun, so it's a cold planet. You know, literally none of this makes any sense. I encourage you to read the books that I've written. I go into a great amount of detail for why the planets look the way they look, and it makes a lot more sense to understand that Venus is a brand new planet. It's very young. But let's get back to planet Earth, and I want to spend the rest of the time on this show talking about the main topic, which is really what is global warming all about. And I go into a lot more detail in the weather book, where I talk about the myth of climate and the myth of global warming. Now, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about the myth of climate. What really is climate? And just the term climate seems to imply that the Earth somehow is going to maintain its current temperature and atmospheric profile for millions and millions of years uninterrupted. And that was the previous thought of a long time ago. That's what all the science books were based on, etc. The belief that Earth somehow has a climate. Well, let me explain what will happen to Earth's climate if all of a sudden the sun turned off. Let's just take this hypothetical example, and a lot of times you do this in science. You create a hypothetical thought experiment. The Germans, when Einstein was around, they used to call it Gedanken experiments, thought experiments. And you would think out a situation that would help you understand what things are like, why things are the way they are. So the thought experiment is to imagine what Earth would be like if all of a sudden the sun turned off, the sun shut down. What would become of Earth? Well, we have a very good measure of this. Every day the Earth turns around on its axis. We go into nighttime, so literally we have a very good base for understanding what happens when the sun turns off. We go into nighttime and the temperature will drop 20 to 30 degrees easily at nighttime. And say now that when you came back around and instead of dawn occurring and moving back into sunlight, you just remained in darkness. And you dropped another 30 degrees in another 12 hours, and another 30 degrees in 12 hours. Where is your climate? What does climate really mean, and how stable is it? If the sun's energy output changes by 5%, then our energy input would change by 5%. If the sun's energy output changed by 5% and increased by 5%, then the Earth's climate would change. So we're not really talking about Earth's climate, we're talking about the solar environment climate. And believe me, man and his little cars running around this planet are not changing that. It is something that is totally independent of this planet, the same situation for Mars, Venus, etc. So the question is, what does climate really mean? The answer is, there really is no such thing as climate. Climate is the biggest misnomer on the planet, because literally you can understand that climate can change instantaneously. In fact, we depend on a minute-by-minute, second-by-second input influx of energy from the sun. And all the global warming and all the computer models on the planet are not going to change that. All of the greenhouse gases is not going to change that. Global warming is really a myth because, first of all, let's talk about the history of where global warming came from. Venus had a tremendously high temperature, much to the surprise of standard scientists, when we first got satellites there. So they came up with this greenhouse effect that supposedly Venus was heated by a greenhouse effect. Simply, it did not work, and many scientists pointed that out, but NASA was in dire need of an explanation for why Venus was a very steamy, hot planet, 900 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to melt lead at its surface. But Venus had some very unusual conditions. It didn't rotate like Earth. It didn't turn on its axis every 24 hours. In fact, it hardly turned at all. So it would spend hundreds of days with no rotation, and one side of Venus was always away from the Sun, and one side of Venus was towards the Sun. So there was no mechanism to get the heat from the hot Sun side around to the cooler night side, yet the measurements showed that Venus had the same temperature on the night side as it did on the day side. It had no winds to, or any type of current or mechanism to get the heat from the Sun side to the non-Sun side. So right away, real scientists knew that this greenhouse effect didn't work. But you had really bad scientists like Carl Sagan running around beating a drum and making it a stick, so to speak, so that now it's in every textbook. Very bad science, and still being regurgitated to the public. Now let's look at Earth. Earth has a very thin atmosphere compared to Venus. Venus has an atmosphere about 900 times as dense as that of Earth. Tremendously thick, dense atmosphere. So if a greenhouse were ever going to exist, it would exist on Venus, but as I've just said, the greenhouse effect does not even work on Venus. So how is it going to work on Earth with our very frail, thin atmosphere comparatively to that of Venus? And the answer is that it doesn't. There is no greenhouse effect. There is no global warming due to man-made causes. It is the biggest myth on the planet. So once again, even if we had global warming due to the greenhouse effect, let's play devil's advocate. Let's pretend that there was such a thing. The solar input dominates by such a large factor that the greenhouse effect would have no visible effect at all, because literally the sun is changing on a daily basis. The solar conditions are changing on a daily basis, and they cycle over at least an 11-year cycle, a 22-year cycle, etc. So the solar conditions, plus, we don't have data that goes back more than maybe 50 years. And beyond that, we have very sparse data. We don't have data. I see scientists talking about satellite pictures they've taken of the polar caps and the glaciers. We didn't have satellites taking these pictures 50 or 100 or 200 years ago, so there's no comparison. How can they possibly talk about climate lasting millions of years when we don't have data that even goes back 20 years? Most of the data taken for climatology and climatological studies was taken in the past 5 years. Very, very bad science. Very poor science, and getting the amount of fanfare it's getting, obviously there's a problem with the scientific process. Obviously, there's a great deal of misinformation being passed around through the standard news media. So let's talk a little bit about the effects of what we would call climate, but let's look at the relaxation from coming out of the Ice Age just a few thousand years ago. After the Ice Age, which was caused by Earth spending a good deal of time in a comet tail, very large comet, where the sun was blocked out, we had a great influx of oil and water and pollution, and after the Earth started to recover, we had lost a tremendous amount of solar input over that, they said, 40 days and 40 nights of rain, and basically in the comet tail for that period of time, according to the biblical and historical texts. That's a long time. Can you imagine Earth without sunlight being blocked on a cosmic scale for 40 days and 40 nights, we would be in a very big cold snap, let's put it that way. The glaciers formed, and as the earth began to recover and the clouds cleared, the warming process was very slow. As time went on, the warming process picked up and continued to increase and accelerate to the point where we're at right now. We're coming up the last cusp of warming to get back to normal. Then it will level off. So right now we are definitely seeing a very severe warming cycle on Earth, but it's because we're coming out of an ice age. We're in the last throes of recovering from that, and then the climate will stabilize. So the people who are predicting that this temperature will keep going up and up and up are simply wrong, because they don't know what's causing it. Their computer models really don't have the right factors, and they use this magical term, computer models, as if somehow God had created the computer model and it's flawless. But in their own studies, they show that the computer models are way off from the predicted ice melting on the polar caps. And this, to me, shows that the greenhouse effect, the global warming people, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, are all full of hot air, if anything is. And they are simply paid scientists. They are people who are there for the grant money, not to do real hard research, unfortunately. And the end result is going to be the control of fresh water. Mark my words that within a couple years, you're going to see definite movement. You're going to be paying a lot more for water. You're going to have private corporations coming in to take over the water supply and the distribution of your water supply in your local communities. And you are going to be paying $3 a gallon for water, just like you're paying that for gasoline right now. That's coming down the road. Mark my words on that one. So, and this is all due to very bad science, very qualitatively recordable bad science, but it's being pushed in the popular media. It's being rammed down your throat, and the end result is a few scientists are going to get grant money and get paid, and there are some small background groups that are going to get control of your water supply. And once they do that, they now have control, literally, of the planet. But as I said, this is devastating because the greatest resource the world has ever seen, the freshwater reservoirs coming off the ice caps, is melting into the oceans and being wasted, while these greedy clowns are running around the planet trying to charge large sums of money. It's not like oil, because once this melts, it's going to be gone. It's going to be a resource that is gone. There is a tremendous amount of oil on the planet, and that'll still be here. But the fresh water will not. It's melting, and we have to do something about it. It has to be moved to correct locations to reverse desertification, the desert creating phenomena that is going on Earth right now. The deserts are being created because the forests, the tropical forests, have been cut down. And once the sun starts beating on the dry land in the tropics, it's very difficult to get it to grow again. There are methods for doing that. Let's talk a little bit about the planet Mars. Mars is heating up also. I don't think there's many cars running around on Mars creating CO2 or greenhouse effects. Mars has doubled its atmosphere in the last 10 to 15 years, and this is known from satellite data. So some very interesting changes are going on in the solar system. The solar system is very dynamic, very changing, and it's something that we are seeing on this planet. There was a myth, and a continuing myth, that Earth, for some reason, had not changed in millions and millions, if not billions of years. There's a myth that somehow our atmosphere is the same now as it was hundreds of millions of years ago, and that somehow the dinosaurs lived in the same atmosphere. Simply not the case at all. I suspect that the dinosaurs had a very different atmosphere than we had today, different water content. The Earth may have had an atmosphere much denser with much higher water content, and I've said this repeatedly, that the humans a long time ago probably lived in, because of our skin, we're always trying to put something, a moisturizer on our skin. That's because a long time ago man lived in a much more water-rich environment. The atmosphere was denser, had more water, etc. And now I want to get into the final point. As the air temperature increases, as the water temperature increases, as the Earth warms up due to the natural cycle of coming out of an ice age, what exactly is going to happen? Well, warm water creates evaporation, so more water is going into the atmosphere. Warm air holds more water. It's a very clear chemical principle that warm air will hold more water. Colder air holds less water. So as the Earth temperature, mean temperature, rises, the heat content rises, and the amount of water vapor that can be held in the atmosphere rises. So we are going to have more water, not less, in the atmosphere. There are tremendous rivers of water that flow in the atmosphere that create our weather systems. It evaporates off the ocean and comes in the cloud systems. Tremendous rivers of water that pass off the oceans and come inland. Another point that I've made in my weather book is that there is water that comes in regularly from outer space. Water is formed in outer space when hydrogen and oxygen combine in the electric field that is part of the Earth's, basically like a comet tail. This water is influxing into the atmosphere, and you can actually see this on the satellite data. As storms form at night and the cloud systems build, there simply is more water in the storm system than can be attributed to water that came in from atmospheric evaporation from over the ocean. So that water is coming from someplace, and it's coming from outer space. Most of that water ends up in the poles, as it's called a hydrological cycle. The water cycles up in the atmosphere and eventually, very quickly, ends up at the North and South Pole. So at any rate, this is what would happen as the climate changes, as the climate warms up. More water is evaporated off the ocean, more water content in the air, more rain, etc. And so the idea that there is going to be a drought is simply a misnomer. It's a scare tactic. And it's misinformation that is being used to try and drive up the price of water and drive up the ownership of water and to make people believe that they have to give up their water rights to some private corporation that's taking them over. That's exactly what's going on. Now, you can understand from basic scientific principles, the oceans are producing more water, the air has more water, and the ice is coming off in huge volumes off the ice caps. There is a great abundance of water that will occur during global warming. I'll be back next week to talk about these and other topics. Once again, I am out of time. Be sure to visit my website. And my personal recommendation has always been, always will be, you need your own source of fresh water. Make sure you get a Berkey water filter. I have three of them. And if you have a cabin, anything like that, you want to make sure you have one. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.